Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Yes, we continue our absorbing series on addictions with our human condition expert, clinical psychologist Lynn Worsley. Tonight we look at the touchy addiction to sex. Not for the faint-hearted, perhaps, but we'll jump right in. Lynn, welcome.
Thanks for having
me,
Lynn.
Great to see you. Thanks very much for coming in. As always, let's begin with somewhat of a definition. What do you class as a sexual addiction?
Look, there's a lot unknown about sexual addiction. In fact, we still don't even agree on the name. So we have a sexual addiction or hypersexuality or a compulsive sexualized behavior, sexual disorder, and there's some that would say that it's even a disease. However, we do know that it is a disorder that can affect everyone. It can be men, women, straight, gay, and it's found in almost every ethnic group. So the origins of the disorder are most likely to be a complex interaction of biological, psychological, and environmental factors. So, as we always mention, there's changes in the brain that are noticed, and genetics plays a big part. Also, trauma and early life experiences have all been implicated. Now, each person has their own story, and it's different for every person, but the problem is still the same.
From your experience, are there more cases of sexual addiction coming forward, for instance, to your practice?
Certainly into my practice we see a lot of people who have pornography addiction.
Yeah.
And sexual addiction will often come up when you're dealing with couples. But gradually people are still finding it difficult to talk about it.
Yes.
But in the church, for instance, there's a high prevalence. And I think that might be due to a number of reasons. People seek refuge in the church from sexual feelings through celibacy.
Yes.
Sometimes people become overly fixated with sex, often becoming quite phobic about sex. And that's often to satisfy their own feelings of guilt. And they do that by becoming judgmental of others, unfortunately. And they see that the church is a place that helps them to put restrictions on themselves, but also to be on others as well. So it's unfortunate that the church has appeared as a place of judgment and not as a place of healing for sexual disorders. Let's hope we can change some of that.
Yeah, hard to imagine how that happened, but anyhow, that's another discussion probably. So are you actually saying that avoiding sex can also be a sign of sex addiction too?
Yes. Now, while some people use sexual acting out as a way of coping with their feelings, others sometimes move to the opposite side of the spectrum and become fixated on avoiding all sexual behaviour. And that's just simply the other side of the coin of sex addiction.
Which is probably not a healthy thing either.
No, it's similar to starvation diets used by some people with eating disorders.
Yes.
Now, the influencing factors leading to sexual anorexia, which is another way of calling sexual phobia, are similar to sex addiction, and they include childhood wounds caused by a lack of parental attachment, emotional neglect or abuse, and traumatic life experiences, and an inability to manage their strong emotional feelings. Yeah. Now, sexual anorexia or sexual acting out or acting in can be quite damaging to a marriage relationship at an emotional and psychological level, of course. And it's not uncommon for sex addicts to attempt to control their sex addiction by becoming averse to any sexual behaviour, a bit like a homophobic, you know, having some homosexual tendencies.
Wow. So you mentioned marriage. Is this something likely to develop long after someone gets married?
Well, it's actually common for a spouse of a sex addict to become averse to any sexual intimacy, which is understandable. Mm. Often the more out of control the sex addict is, the more closed down sexually the spouse becomes.
Yes.
That highlights the importance of couples entering into a recovery program together, as one person's sex addiction invariably affects both people.
So how does someone develop a sexual addiction?
Look, there's one theory that says it's an early history of trauma, and unconsciously a person's trying to repeat the trauma with the hope of mastering the trauma, which is a very deep and interesting one.
Totally.
So that's a theory. So we'll just leave that there.
Okay.
Another, you know, if we look at sexual addiction, it's actually a process addiction. It means that you don't have to ingest any chemicals in order to create the high that you want. And now that's similar to the gambling addiction that we talked about last
week.
Yes, So often there's a progression in the behavior from safe sex to more dangerous to more adventurous and then devious sex in order to get the same high. The same goes for the consequences. There's damages to relationships, there's damaged loved ones, avoidance of close attachment and a real intimacy is in exchange for cold sex without attachment. And there's big changes in the career and energy and changes in their success.
Yeah.
It isn't about the sex. It's actually rather about the behaviour of choice to manage feelings and emotions.
So it's not so much a physical thing, which you always imagine when you're talking
about sex. That's right. Well, it is and it isn't. Emotional feelings such as loneliness, shame, fear, anxiety, stress, anger and sadness are emotions that someone with a sex addiction often can't handle. So one of the behaviours that characterises an addict is that they actually desire to silence their emotions. So they have a behavior that produces a high and then they don't have to deal with their emotions.
Wow.
Now last time we talked a little bit about the limbic system and when the limbic system functions normally, the person gets an emotional attachment with another person and they learn about their own emotions through a feedback mechanism.
Yes.
Now that tells them whether they're loved or accepted and there's feelings of contentment and warmth in the brain and that results in sort of a soothing and a regulation of your emotions. Now, someone with a sex addiction is unable to self-soothe or regulate their emotions. So they look for an alternative feeling that either distracts or overtakes the uncontrolled emotional state that they have. So sexual behaviour is just one of those, and arousal is immediate and gratifying for a while. However, they seek more and more, and each time the gratification takes to more extreme behaviours. So it builds to more of an addiction.
Yes.
Now, they avoid close intimacy. Now, that sounds weird, doesn't it, when we're talking about sex addiction, but they actually avoid the close intimacy because they don't want to be personally vulnerable. Rather, they have highly sexualized behavior in replace of the real intimacy. And that's because there's a real deep sense of shame associated with being vulnerable, and there's a fear that they'll be rejected at that very, very level.
Yeah. So what is defined as healthy sexuality? How do we know when there is an addiction and try to tell between the two of those?
Now, look, healthy sexuality involves recognising that we're all sexual beings and celebrating the way sexuality benefits us physically, emotionally and spiritually. Mm. Now, healthy sexuality is positive and it enriches our lives. Healthy sexuality allows us to enjoy and control our sexual behaviour without any guilt or fear and shame.
Yeah.
Now, Wendy Maltz developed the CERTS model, C-E-R-T-S, for healthy sex. And this model requires the following conditions for a person to enjoy healthy and satisfying sex: consent, equality, respect, trust, and safety, which is CERTS. Consent means you can freely and comfortably choose whether or not you're able to stop the activity at any time during the sexual contact. Equality means your sense of personal power is on an equal level, so neither of you dominates.
Yes.
Respect means you've got positive regard for yourself and your partner and you feel respected by your partner and you respect them. Trust means you trust your partner on physical and emotional level. You have a mutual acceptance of vulnerability and an ability to respond to it sensitively. And safety means you feel secure and safe within the sexual feeling.
And I suppose all of that's a bit of a no-brainer, really.
That's right.
Yes.
But compulsive sexual addiction encompasses a broad range of behaviours from pursuing sexual relationships, occasional glimpses at pornography, to an obsession with the internet pornography, and we'll cover that in a bit more detail next week, and compulsive masturbation at any one time or place, to all the behaviours in between. And it infringes on other people's rights and other people's lives and families, and the behaviour becomes the focus and not the other person. So the CERTS model is completely violated for either or the other partner or for both, the addict as well.
So it is important that an addiction is recognised or owned up to and treatment sought.
Yes, that's right. We need to recognise that it's a disorder. I think there's been some discussion that it's maybe not a disorder and it's just people really going with their hedonistic pleasures. We need to actually acknowledge that it is a disorder, and having a label reduces the shame so that people will seek help. Otherwise, it remains hidden. Mm. This is a really difficult task here, because do we want to reduce the shame? Well, yes, we do. We actually want to reduce the shame of an addiction, not the shame of the act, the shame of the addiction.
Yep.
It's regarded as the most hidden of disorders, and for that reason, it becomes more compulsive in its behaviour and more deviant and more damaging, because it happens behind closed doors and the person continues in and out of relationships and puts the public at risk. It'd
be an extraordinary hard thing to own up to yourself, let alone to anybody else.
Yeah. Look, the consequences of the disorder can touch all aspects of your life. And it includes loss of friends, social isolation, loss of income, loss of job advancement, arrest, loss of health due to sexual transmitted diseases, pregnancies, child and family custody issues, loss of a marriage partner, loss of time with children, depression, anxiety, guilt, shame. The list goes on.
Help me, doctor. but it's true. I mean, it is quite harrowing, but all the more reason to get it identified and dealt with.
Yes.
Here's a question. Is there a difference between an addiction that a male has and an addiction that a female has?
Interestingly, no. There's not a huge difference. We're getting similar responses from males and females. But remember, too, it's a hidden disorder. Mm. And so not a lot of people are coming forward as an addiction. They're coming forward with their desires, and certainly you see that on the internet. But most of it's hidden in terms of those people who really can't help themselves.
Yes.
But those people who are seeking help appear to be male and female. So most often it occurs within the relationship, and the relationship issue is the huge one. It might begin with the discovery of a partner using pornography or hooking up with someone online with cameras, etc., or using phone and sexting. I have trouble saying that one.
I take it, am I being kind of sexist here, that this is going to be a problem more for men than women?
No.
Okay.
No. And I think, too, we've got to realise, too, that when there's trauma, early childhood trauma, that happens to men, boys and girls.
Yes, yeah.
It might seem that girls get abused more often, but it's not really the case. Boys get abused quite often as well. And so if there's going to be an addiction, it will be for both.
Okay.
Now, one lady I listened to on the SASH site, which is the Society for the Advancement of Sexual Health, and I think there's a SASH website.
Okay.
She reported she'd had multiple affairs and was increasingly acting out until she had a separate life from her husband, completely separate life, and her value system was completely at risk, and she felt like she'd lost her integrity. She had so much shame attached to it, and there were moral judgments on her behaviour, so she didn't come forward. But it wasn't until she sought help from a professional that she managed to get hold of her addiction and recover her dignity. But interestingly, her healing journey began when she found herself with multiple health difficulties. And she sat next to someone in a waiting room, and she talked to someone, just opened up. And they said, "I'm so sorry that you have this." And they didn't judge her at all. They just said, "I'm just so sorry." And because of that one response, she then felt brave enough to go and get some help.
What a stunning thing, and what a stunning lesson for everyone.
Yeah.
Especially in the church, as you said before.
Yeah.
How do you treat a sexual addiction then?
Look, it's really hard to work out any one type of treatment due to the different effects and the type of behaviour that's there, and also the relationships that they're in. But treatment should always be tailor-made for the individual, whatever the problem. But what's interesting, though, is that it starts as an addiction is not actually what the reason it starts as an addiction is not actually the reason it's maintained as an addiction.
Okay.
So if I ask you why you started smoking or drinking, it might be different to why you're still doing it.
Yes.
So basically, it's the same with sex addiction as well. Now, remember, too, the limbic system doesn't have the capacity with an addict to give you feedback. So it's really important that in treatment that we start looking at how we can actually get some sort of feedback mechanism so they learn to control their emotional responses. Whenever we're dealing with any sort of addiction, we usually start with trying to get a plan in place. But the addict has to come forward first.
Yeah, which is probably the biggest challenge.
That's the hardest challenge. But generally, if you're in a relationship with someone who is an addict or a sex addict, it's important to raise the awareness. Give them feedback. Let them know that this is just out of control and they need to get some help. So when you actually are getting help, the first question that you should be asked is it interrupting your life? How much is it interrupting your life? Let's see how we start, you know, how we can start looking at how you'd like a different life.
Or the life of the person with whom you're relating.
Yes.
Your relationship with.
I always ask the question, how would you like to be instead? What would it be like when this is fixed? And what will it look like? And how will your partner notice you? And what sort of relationship would you have?
It seems that it's, by this time, got to a really serious level.
Yes.
Because for quite a time, I imagine, they'd be fine with an addiction that gives them such pleasure.
Yeah, yeah. Until everything starts to fall apart.
Yes.
And, you know, remember too, we're going to have a whole lot of side effects and consequences. But remember too, last week we talked a little bit about the gambling addict who didn't seem to pick up when they were losing.
Yeah.
And they just kept going with the drive to keep winning at the highest
stakes. The heart racing.
Yes. Now that's the same thing with the sex addict. The gratification is so high that they need to have more and more and they don't seem to know when to stop.
If there's someone who's been listening, I should ask this, who thinks either this is me or this is my partner, what would you say to them?
Look, if you feel like it's what you've heard so far applies to you or someone else you care about, you might want to look at a website that's the www.sash.
Okay.
Sash.net. And that's a good place to start looking. And there's a questionnaire you can do online to actually see if there is an issue. But then it's really important that you go and find a therapist who knows how to treat sex addictions. The important thing to do, too, is to ask them how they've treated it before and what sort of methods they use. Also, you need to really feel safe with your therapist. You need to make sure that when you talk to your therapist, you feel safe enough to be able to disclose.
I was going to ask that. This has to be a very special place for either the sex addict themselves or the person in the relationship to go and feel safe.
Yes. And so, you know, come up with just, are you okay with me talking about my sexuality? And if they go, oh, look, you know, you might be better to talk to someone else about that. That's great. Get them to give you a good referral.
Yes.
But check out, if you feel comfortable with your therapist, then that's the right person, as long as they know how to
I was going to say, it's not a given that all therapists can necessarily do that.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
So find somebody who knows how to treat addictions, who has had some experience with sexual addictions, and make sure you feel safe. It's a long process of healing, as with any addiction.
Yes.
And it's recommended that you bring your partner and that you go through therapy at the same time, that is if you have a partner, to help you to accommodate to your changes in boundaries and to help you to have some sort of a vision for the future for the two of you.
Yes.
One of the difficulties of working with people is seeing that they go through enormous change and they do really, really well, but their partner doesn't seem to actually notice the change. And sometimes you need to make sure that both people are going through the therapy at the same time.
So you recommend that they both go at the same time?
Yes.
What about people in churches? Is there going to be a different approach to them?
Yes.
By the way, I've just posted on our Open House Community Facebook page the sash.net website for people.
That now, in churches, we do see a lot of people who have addictions, and I think I'll be talking a little bit more about pornography addictions, and
yes,
there seems
week.
To be a lot
yes.
we're talking about at the moment, particularly in churches. And I say that because, remember, churches do create a haven for people. It's not because we attract addicts.
It's a good point to make, yes.
But if you have somebody who comes up with having an addiction, it's really important, a sexual addiction, that they actually are made to feel safe, not judged.
It's that safe place again.
It's the safe place. And too often I see people get rejected because they have this addiction and they're regarded as sinful or dirty, and the shame. The shame is already there. They don't need to have that put on by anyone else. What they need is to have a place where they can feel a sense of safe intimacy, not sexual intimacy, the safe intimacy where they can actually be vulnerable and share their feelings and emotions and have people around them to help them to regulate their emotions and to demonstrate good regulation of emotions.
And for those people to consider, what would Jesus do?
And what would Jesus do?
Yes.
Yes. Mentoring, having a mentor group would be fantastic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, next week we go to the addiction of pornography, which is so much in the headlines, which is where we actually kicked this, that idea that we first had when we kicked this series off. It's been very absorbing listening and working through some of these issues. Lynn Worsley, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.